This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I got a massage. It's only one of two or three I've ever had. And I remember that experience for one thing. The masseuse kept telling me, she said, "All right, relax. Relax your leg." And I said, "I am." She's like, "No. Like, you're
really?
Not."
Right.
And I didn't know how to relax for her. Like, I couldn't do it.
You never had a woman touch you like that? That's why you're kind of tensing up?
I guess maybe that, Rob. That's a great, great point. Or just I'm always walking around,
tense,
tightly wound.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't think it was good that I couldn't relax for her.
Maybe you should drink before you go down there next time.
Well, I mean, that's not going to work.
I looked into a massage yesterday, but it was like $340 for an hour, and I said,
"Yeah, I bet it was."
You pass
I'll
on
go
that.
Rub my own feet.
Right.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Hey, welcome back. Fun and busy sports right now with so much. The hockey playoffs, the Sabres still with their vacancy at head coach. The NFL draft is next week, starting Thursday night in Nashville. And Tiger yesterday. And I wanted to make a point about Tiger Woods and get your reaction to this. You know, thinking about, really, like it's watching your son compete in sports and really get good. One thing that I was really excited about or impressed with yesterday about him was that after almost everything he did, they would show him and you couldn't tell how he felt. And I love that in sports. Mm-hmm. I love people who don't give it away like that. I think, my sports experience is very limited, and most of it's a long time ago. But if I could, if I were playing sports now, this I would do, because I think I could do it. This job has made me good at that. Because, you know, people tweet you really dumb or awful things sometimes. What power do you have over that? You can't expect to ever get anywhere with that person. It's not worth it to even try. If you show your fans, you know, like in a subtweet or something, that this awful person said this to me, nobody's impressed. Nobody cares. You're not... People who you'd like to change their mind, it's not worth it to try. Uh-huh. And people who you want to impress aren't impressed. There's no way to win. So your only power is in keeping it to yourself. And then the person doesn't know if you saw it, what your reaction to it was,
right.
Nothing. That's your power over the situation. And so, like, if I'm playing sports against you, I might not be better than you, but the one thing I'm going to have control of is how I look and how I react to things. And, you know, Tiger is this intimidating presence, and I think he probably still is. You know, in the day, it was how, like, the other top players couldn't even, you know, function around him, just his presence. He doesn't, like, yesterday, he never, at least, you know, on camera, right?
Mm-hmm.
He never gave you a clue
No.
about how he felt.
And that is that's a big change from how he handled himself when he was in his prime. I used the word joyless earlier. He was demonstrative, but it was mostly always negative, like a bad shot or sniping at people who took a picture or whatever it was. There'd be cursing and the anger. There was a lot of anger, and I mean, he didn't hit very many bad shots. I mean, he won the thing. But, you know, he didn't hit everything perfectly. And, I mean, what you saw on TV presented a very different competitor than the one who would throw a club down or swear or whatever bothered me about him 15 years ago was not in evidence at all yesterday. And I also admire that trait in someone who's competing at a level that I can't even really grasp. It's something that I think you try to. I've tried to teach my son as he's grown in his efforts, because I think it's important. He had one situation this year where he acted in a way that it upset. I left. I was very upset. He was having a very tough time. They were getting clobbered, and he behaved in a way that I was like, boy, we're going to talk about this tomorrow. Like, I can't even talk about it now. He won't want to talk about it now. I know he's going to feel bad about it. And basically I told him, like, you just never know who's watching you, man. Like, you're at a level here where and as it turns out, this team that he's still with in Des Moines right now told us that they watched him a lot this year. And they never, it's not like they call you and say, hey, we're coming to watch. They just were there. You know, they had people watching. So, you know, being stoic in the position he plays, he's a goaltender. For anyone who doesn't know that, I shouldn't just assume everyone tuning in knows this whole story. He's a goalie. So, like, there's opportunity to lose your temper and look bad. And it always means a lot to me when he stands tall in there and just sort of, okay, you know, there's a goal, whatever. Since he started playing that position, there's lots of things that I've said to him repeatedly, but one thing that I started saying right away was, what's the next what's the most important shot? The next one. That one that went in is done. It's over. It's out of the net, and they're facing off, so now you got to get ready to stop the next one.
Yeah, the better, I mean, what do I know? But it seems like the better you can do that, the better off you are.
Yeah.
In any sport, the better off you can, the better you can do, move forward, the better off you are. I thought yesterday, because I was thinking this watching Tiger, like, what is he feeling? Is he feeling like he's going to win? Is he drawing on his experience winning? Is he, you know, what? You could never see it in his face. It was just that gum. You could never really see it in his face. And I was totally, like, obsessed with that and hooked on that. Like, you don't know. Even playing, coming up 18, he hits that second shot short, right? He hit the second shot short, and then up on the green in three, and it was always the same face. And even, I started to say it, or I did, Faldo and Jim Nantz were even saying it themselves at one point. Wouldn't you love to know what he's thinking? They couldn't tell you what he was thinking. I mean, there are people who were broadcasting it and who were watching it who were intimate with his story and all the different injuries and all the different, you know, everything that happened that would have, like, really been ready for him to win. And I was like half of that. I mean, I certainly know his story, but I'm not watching golf tournaments that, you know, aren't majors anymore. And really, like, I realized I do not know what to expect from him if he does it. And all the way up until the end, like, just there was no clue until he made the final putt. And that was the end of the tournament. That was the last shot of the day on the golf course by anyone. He makes that final putt, and then it was just this, I mean, this, like, animal kind of
release. It was volcanic. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And it was just like, okay. And then he was able to, I mean, you could see the joy. He takes his hat off. He's shaking hands. I love that moment. In these tournaments, it's Finau was first, and then a caddy maybe, and Molinari came in, and then he got to his caddy, and they, like, bro hugged, and he shoved him, like, in a happy way. He starts to walk off. He puts his hat back on. He comes over to where his bag is. He sort of throws his putter down as if, wow. and then he walks toward his family, and then there was this genuine, joyous release there with his son coming over. That son is, I did look at, he's 10, by the way, that little guy.
I found out he had a soccer tournament that they lost in the semifinals, which is why he was there.
Was it his daughter or was it both?
Oh,
was it him?
I'm sorry.
Maybe it was his son.
Okay, one of the kids had a commitment that they lost, so they were able to be there. So he asked, "Do you want to come?" And they said, "Yeah." So they came.
Right. Like, how about that too? Right.
Right.
Like, you want to come to the Masters then?
Right.
Since you're not playing soccer tomorrow.
That fell just right. You know, otherwise maybe the whole family would have been somewhere else.
Yeah.
So
there was so much. I mean, this guy, and I think, you know, of course, like, society gets to this place where we think we know famous people and we're judging them all the time and, you know, saying whatever we want to say about them, whatever. It's like they're not even real people. And so I'm guilty of some of that with Tiger Woods, but he's like the most famous sports person of my adult life. The way he took over golf and this just transcended like that and then went away and now comes back and does this. And so I'm guilty of doing that. Like, I am trying to read his mind. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to guess at what he's feeling and and golf is great for that. You can see the person.
Right.
You know, like, you get full access to their face and for 4 or 5 hours at a time.
Right.
In a day.
Right. You're watching Molinari after he hits it in the water at 12. And they're right. I mean, they are, like, you can almost see up his nose. I mean, they are right on top of him.
That ball was in the air. His mouth made a little move. And I said it to my daughter. I'm like, look, you can see. I'm trying to get her into it. And she's standing there with me as Molinari hits that shot. I'm like, look, you on the replay, look, you can see his mouth move a tiny little bit. You know he's afraid.
Yeah.
Right there, he's afraid.
Well, I might guess that I've not watched Tiger enough since he's been back and relatively competitive here, enough to say whether or not this stoicism that we are talking about here is something that's been there for a year and a half or 2 years or is newfound and was just on display because of the magnitude of the tournament and the moment that he was in. But I might guess here that the reaction afterward, the amount, the outpouring, I said volcanic. Like, I mean, it was just, I mean, it's the fans, but it was him. Like, I mean, he was howling. You don't see golfers howl on the green after they win.
Not often enough.
It's not some, you get jumping and, you know, crying, but like howling. And so maybe the stoicism was because the emotions were so much that he just had to keep it completely reined in. Otherwise, he would have been all over the place.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, he just, that felt to me like I will get emotional almost every year watching the Stanley Cup.
The ceremony.
Yeah, who gets it second. It's some grizzled old guy who's on the team and is the sixth defenseman, and like he's next because he's played 650 games and never won a cup, so he gets it instead of Malkin, you know, whatever. I love that. I think that's emotional. That's what yesterday felt like watching that to me for Woods, and it was just a golf tournament for a guy that I never really felt passionate about at all.
There have been so many times. I mean, this is a long time ago, most of it. But so many times when, like, Tiger Woods did a thing on the course or said a thing and, like, just everybody talked about that. And in part of that, too, along the way is when he was first starting to dominate, you're trying to understand him. Like, what is this? It was just like, you know, the whole thing about, for example, I'm not here to finish second. You know, like that kind of talk and act and, like, people were sort of taken by that and talked about that. And so he just was so different than the other top players who all just seem, you know, fine being friendly and just, you know, whatever. And the one story about his focus and just like attitude on the golf course that I've always loved is the Scotty Bowman story. So this is the 2000 U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. The Open is this year at Pebble Beach. When I think he finished 12 under and second place was plus 3. Els maybe or Jimenez, like he won by 15 shots. And it was way ahead. This is the Tiger Slam. He was way ahead by the Sunday round, of course. So Scotty Bowman, now I don't know Bowman. This is from somebody who knows him who told me this story a long time ago. I've always loved it. Bowman won. He bid on, maybe, or just for whatever reason, he won the right to be the standard bearer for the last group of the Open that year, which means he's holding that little scoreboard. He's walking around the course that day,
identifying the golfers and what their scores are. Right.
With the scoreboard. And I guess Bowman, I hope this story is accurate. Bowman is in like the row. The players walk from the clubhouse to the tee, and Bowman is the standard bearer. Like, he's on the tee, or he's like right visible in front of Tiger Woods. And he knew Woods. He'd met him. He knew him. And he sees Tiger Woods coming to start the day. Everybody's cheering. And Tiger just like walked right past him. Like, he didn't even acknowledge him at all. And like, maybe Bowman felt, okay, well, yeah, you know, he's here to do a job. And then the round starts. And now he is on the tee box on every hole.
Right.
And never is, like, Tiger never acknowledges him. He puts out on 18 to win the tournament by 15. It's a joke. He celebrates however he celebrates. Maybe his dad is there, maybe his coach, whatever. And he walks past Bowman, and Bowman is thinking, I can't believe it. I know this guy, and not once the whole day did he ever even say hi to me. He didn't ever even acknowledge me the whole day. He goes in, you go in, like, maybe where the players go with your scoreboard. Like, he's going to go return it. It's over. And Bowman sees him do that. Bowman sees him after the round. He's inside, and he sees him, and he goes, Scotty Bowman, when did you get here? And, like,
yeah,
Tiger Woods was such a big deal. Everything about him, like, people just went, especially golf fans, but even other people, like, what is this move? Like, what power? And I just still did not appreciate how big a deal it would be, even with, like, that sort of perspective. I still did not appreciate how big a deal it would be if he won again.
Right. And, I mean, I guess until it actually happened, I mean, I don't know. I guess just about like everybody else, until late last year, I thought it's never going to happen. So I don't even really need to think about what the magnitude of it. Why think about the magnitude of something you don't expect to happen? There's no point in even considering it. Then, you know, the year ended, and, like, he won that last thing that took the focus away from whoever won the FedEx, whatever the hell that was, right? He won that last tournament that the guy clinched the playoff or whatever it was. And, like, okay, well, he can win. And he contended it. He was in contention at the British, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was a story. So, like, okay, well, maybe this can happen. But it's still, like, I don't know. We talked about it on Wednesday when you did your picks. Whatever the odds were, like, he was in the top 10 or 7 favorites. I wouldn't have picked him either. I'm going to see him do it first.
Putting.
I can't. Right, right. Like, I'm just not ready to say that this can happen again. So I guess it all just sort of caught me by surprise, too, that I would be emotional about it, that I would care on the level that I cared, and that the magnitude of it would immediately vault this story to such a high level to me. Like, you know, people come back from stuff in sports all the time. Injuries, drugs, alcohol, whatever. You can come back. You don't go 11 years. You know, like, that just does not happen. Like, a guy doesn't leave baseball to have his arm fixed and come back 11 years later and do the thing that he was famous for doing.
I mean, it's kind of like Roy Hobbs.
Yeah, it just does not happen, you know? So that's not to slight anybody who's overcome a great deal of adversity in a short time frame, you know, a serious injury, and you make it back. Like, good for you. It takes a lot. Your medal was tested, and you came through, and that's great. You got back. You reclaimed your glory. Congratulations. 11 years after winning a major tournament, he's doing this with all the other adversity, some self-inflicted, the back, I mean, spinal fusion surgery.
Yeah, he always had, like, a new back problem.
Yeah.
Or knees or neck or something. Yeah, pretty good. Pretty big day. We both said earlier how I think you and I, and maybe a lot of people, have a tendency to push back against, this thing I'm watching is the greatest thing. you're almost like ready with the joke about people who are calling it the greatest thing, but there's an argument.
I'm getting out of the way for anybody that wants to say that today, because I basically would tell you that that's how I feel. I hope I see something that was as amazing as that again. I mean, just it was magic.
Pretty good. 803-0550 is the number. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here with the update after this break on WGR.
One shot lead. This is in a really good spot if it's the right club. Into the slope. Now it has to come back, and here it comes. Oh, my goodness. Back down the slope. Come on, ball. A foot away.
Tiger at 16 on Westwood One's coverage as heard on WGR. They got moved up because of rain in Augusta in the forecast. And it worked out fine.
Worked out for me, for sure. I mean, I'm always up for big time sports at 9 in the morning. This is totally fine by me.
Yeah.
At weekdays too. I mean, whatever, but I don't mean to be selfish. But on a Sunday, great. As it turned out, I had plans to go out for my brother-in-law's birthday last night, and I knew all week, I certainly knew on Saturday when they made the announcement about changing the times, that I was going to have a hard time seeing the end of the tournament if it went off like it normally went off. So I, for one, was especially personally relieved when I heard, oh, it's going to start at 9 o'clock in the morning. Great!
I wonder when it did start to rain, because I was thinking if there had been a playoff, if they were cutting it really close, there could have been a problem there, but that did not happen. Here is Kevin with us. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, guys. It's kind of like having Michael Jordan back. You know, it's kind of like having Gretzky back. It's almost unbelievable. 11 years and everything he went through. Not only did he blow out his back and have back surgery, he had to relearn how to hit a golf ball so that he could save his back. So he changed his swing. It's truly amazing. There isn't a player now in golf that has his experience, his steelied veteran experience, the knowledge of these courses, and has played on the biggest stages in golf like he has. I mean, the competition, these guys they better be scared, because he's in great physical shape. He looks great to me. He in the past, he looked a little heavy and a little too bloated. He looked fantastic. He's swinging beautifully. And he's just very stoic and, you know, rock solid. I see him competing hard in the rest of the majors and certainly breaking the record.
Interesting. Thanks, Kevin.
I wouldn't want to assume that he's in great health or feels great or can just keep doing this. He did say at the end of his round on Saturday, he was asked, you know, what about tomorrow? So now what's tomorrow like, you know, because you're going to tee off at 9:25, whatever his tee time was. And he said, well, you know, you're used to sleeping in if you're, you know, going to be in one of the final groups on Sunday at the Masters. And, you know, so that'll be different. So I guess I'll get up around 3:30 to start. So 6 hours before his tee time. To start, you know, and I guess there were pictures that were circulated. He has a whole thing with, because of the back, the gym, and like loosen up and to make sure his body, his back specifically, is ready to withstand the rigors of playing and swinging a golf club that many times in that short an amount of time and all that. And so, to me, anyone who has to do that level of preparation, I'm not assuming that's going to just hold up. Like for the entire golf season. I mean, that's a lot to have to go through, and I would think that there's a strain there.
He'll do great to win one more.
Yeah.
I mean, as amazing as yesterday was, he'll do great to win one more. Look at how many guys were like right there, you know, one shot either way. So, I mean, doesn't take anything away from yesterday. Just, it was just a great day.
Right, yeah. I don't mean to be like sort of, you know, we've talked, I mean, I don't know when we've been more complimentary of something that's happened in sports, period, than we have after having seen that yesterday. So I'm not trying to rain on it or anything. I'm just telling you, he's got a serious situation there that requires a lot of work to get him even to compete at that level, which makes it all the more amazing.
6 hours before tee time, I mean, I am probably not even to bed yet.
Right.
6 hours, and then I will get up. Let's say I wake up 45 minutes before the tee time. I will change really quick, splash my face, splash water in my face, drive to the golf course, and hit.
Right.
I'll probably take a couple of practice swings.
Maybe, right.
Maybe I'll even hit the ball with one of them like Zach Johnson did.
Right.
And then I'm ready. Let's go.
It's a rarity for me that I actually get to the range.
The range?
Right. I mean, that just does not happen.
The day you play golf is not the day you go to the range. The range is for the other days.
Yeah, there's not a lot of loosening up that goes on.
Oh, just like, you know, right, like right now, I'm just sort of twisting my back a couple of times from side to side.
I'm not that finely tuned.
Touch the toes if you can do it.
But the guy, I mean, I love the guy saying it's like getting Gretzky back. It's like getting Jordan back. Right. I mean, that's what I was saying before we took the break at the bottom of the hour here. It's in sports, in North American team sports, the guys who go away because of injury come back 9 months or a year later or whatever. They don't go away for 11 years. I mean, you just don't, it just doesn't happen. They age out. It's over. You're done. It's incredible that he's back like that.
David is next. Hello, David.
Hi, guys. I'm going to change subject, Johnny. I tried to get through earlier.
It's fine. Go ahead.
We're talking about hockey. Mike made a comment that he feels like most people want the Sabres to be looking at a name that people know and recognize. I am not. I used the analogy, if I was having heart surgery and they came to me and said, do you want the guy that's done 1,000 surgeries but his last 10 patients died, or do you want the guy that's only done 50 but all of his patients have lived and are doing great? I don't want a guy that's, you know, had some success, but, you know, has been fired from his last three jobs. I want somebody that's been advancing in his career, that's being promoted every time. And I think they got a guy right in their own backyard. I mean, I can't honestly say that I follow the Amherst real, real closely, and I know that much about Chris Taylor, but the Buffalo News had a real nice article about him last weekend, and if that article is anywhere near correct, I think he would be the perfect guy for this job. Now, I realize that there's risk for that for Bottrell, but, you know, I don't want a guy that's, you know, been fired from his last three jobs. I don't want to see that.
I am the same way. I just want the Bills or the Sabres, either of them, to ever do something that seems progressive. I would like for them to ever sound like the sports that are out there that I read about other teams doing. And that can be in who you hire to run your team. That can be something to do with tickets or game presentation. There's a wide range. And I really shouldn't say, like, it's never happened. There are a couple of things that have happened since the Pegulas that have represented that for me. And there are probably other things that I would know about that they've done that would be, that would qualify as progressive. You know, they had this one guy in PT or in among the trainers. Like, they had this one guy from Europe. Remember that? They had some guy that was supposed to be, you know, have a different, I don't remember his name, different way of, and they were excited about him, and then, like, he left.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but, like, just coaching hires, almost every comment, everything just sounds like old sports to me. And I want it to not sound like that anymore, and I don't think it's a coincidence that they lose all the time. So, yeah, somebody who hasn't been fired from their last three jobs is the way that guy put it. How about just like somebody young and there's a curious chance that the person is actually a rock star?
Right. I wouldn't want to dismiss the guy that's been fired three times, because those guys sometimes end up winning in their fourth place or their third place. Like, it's just, there's no exact way to really slice this, but I don't know. You know, we've been so hit and miss here with you being sick. And then I was out at the end of the week somewhere in there while I was still here and you weren't. you know, I was talking about this a lot last Monday and Tuesday, I guess it would have been, because Wednesday you were back. And somebody said, like, who do you want to be the coach? And I said Dallas Eakins.
Oh, wow, that's a great idea.
And I like, and I don't, in sitting here, because he doesn't really fit, I guess, either of the camps. Like, he's not completely new. He was the Edmonton head coach for a very short time while they were terrible. This is 2 years before McDavid, even. So he's not like a recycled guy, but he's not young and up and coming necessarily. He's 51 years old. He's been coaching in the AHL in San Diego for quite a few years now and has won a lot of games. And mostly I remember this is like 2012-13 is when he's the Edmonton coach. And I didn't know anything about any of the stuff that you talk about so frequently here, analytics and all that. But I remember Eakins being mocked for paying respect to that. So this is now 7 years ago, 8 years ago. I think we're in a very different time now. And if he has grown in his appreciation for that sort of stuff, like I'm all for it. Like, he's going to get a job. I think it's coming. Whether it's a lot of talk with Anaheim, I think he's coaching, the team he's coaching is the Ducks affiliate. So maybe he's a little like Chris Taylor is with the Ducks. Like, here's the guys right here, but they might be interested in someone with more name recognition or someone who didn't get laughed at for being so bad in Edmonton. But that, to me, that's the perfect guy. He's maybe a little bit of both. Like, he's not young, but he's not a has-been. He has been fired three times, like the callers asserting. He got fired once, at least in the NHL, and he's never been back. But, okay. I would listen to him all day.
Yeah, that's a very exciting name to me. I'm just ready for different, you know?
I've not heard his name attached to the Sabres in any substantive way whatsoever, just so we're clear. But like, if I'm looking at a list of guys that are available, his name jumps out at me.
I don't know of any person who has been attached to them that's available. I don't know. Who's doing the attaching? Bob McKenzie?
McClellan was the only one.
Who's in charge of the attaching?
I think it's Bob McKenzie.
He's in charge? He runs that?
Him, LeBron, yeah.
Those guys run?
The attaching.
And the news comes out when they want it to come out? When the teams tell them it's okay for that news to come out? All right. Am I taking any attention away from the playoffs if I do this? I mean, other teams seem to, Philadelphia didn't seem to mind.
No, they went ahead and got by, yeah.
Coach Watch.
You betcha.
Got to be over here for
it's,
a second.
It's brought to you by some
straight
some
up wines and liquors. Yep. Go straight up Elmwood to Washington and Kenmore for savings, selection, and service. 803-0550. Thank you, David. Mike Schoaf and the Bulldog, WGR.
All right, first concert ticket giveaway of the week for us right now. A pair of tickets to go see Brantley Gilbert Friday, August 30th at Darien Lake Amphitheater. Minimum value of the prize is $80. Courtesy of Live Nation, general contest rules apply. This is one of these win them before you can buy them deals, because tickets don't go on sale to the general public until Friday at 10 a.m. Find that at livenation.com. But right now, win a pair. 644-9878, caller 5.
I've got a stat for you. My favorite stat of the hockey playoffs so far is that game two of the Columbus-Tampa series that Columbus won, maybe 3-0 was the score of that game?
I think that's right.
Was Columbus's first playoff win by more than one goal ever. They had never won a playoff game by more than one goal before that game. They then won another one last night.
Right.
3-1?
Yep.
So they had never done it. Now they have two in a row.
Right.
The Sabres' last playoff win by more than one goal. I was there.
I don't remember.
I don't advise that you just, you know, strap in.
Right.
And
that's what I was starting to do, and I just gave up quickly.
Yeah. I wanted it to be longer ago than it was. I wanted it to be the Rangers series. But they did beat Boston 4-1 in Game 5 of their Boston series.
2010.
In 2010.
Yeah.
The Flyer series, they won three games by one goal each. The Ottawa series in 07, they had the one win, which was 1-0. And, you know, the end of the Rangers series is one goal wins. It's 5-4 in New York. It's Finneganoff in overtime. But there was one early in that series, I think. Anyway, Adam Mayer scored the first goal of the game, Game 5, in 2010, and they beat Boston 4-1. That's their last playoff win by more than one goal. Well, and, you know,
some names in that lineup, like Cody McCormick showed up and got in the lineup in that series. Like, he hadn't been here all year. I think he was in Rochester, and then just, we're playing the Bruins. Here's Cody McCormick.
Great plan.
Right.
No offense to the guy.
Right. Torres played a little and then got scratched.
Yeah, like you might have had a goal scorer out there that you chose not to dress because you felt like you had to play some sort of physical thing.
Right.
You know, how far did that get you? Miro Chetan scored a double overtime goal in that series for Boston.
Yep.
So, anyway, never mind.
Right. Tim Kennedy.
Yeah, Tim Kennedy in the corner on Recchi.
Corner with Recchi. Right.
Mike Greer scored in that fifth game as well for the Sabres.
Second time around, right?
Yep.
He had been gone for a little bit.
Right? Yep.
All right.
You know, Tampa and Columbus, it happens. No matter how good they were, like, this is not, it's only so surprising.
I know. Everybody we've had on in the last couple of weeks talking about the playoffs coming up, I'd always say, like, I know they got to be some level of favorite. They've had this incredible year, but it's hockey, you know? Like, it's just, would it shock you if there were a bunch of one-goal games there and they didn't win? No. I mean, I think you're not watching the sport, especially in the playoffs, if you go in thinking that, no matter how good they looked in the regular season. What's maybe stunning is that it has not been easy.
No, right. But they're not getting outshot.
But they're
or
not
anything.
Getting killed. And, like, yesterday it took really until the third. I thought Tampa was going to win. And a little of this is just working off Columbus's recent history. They had the 2-0 lead last year in Washington, came home, and they ended up losing. So last night I'm texting Owens in Iowa. So I've lost my watching partner for these playoffs. So I'm watching, I'm texting with him. Tampa scores to make it 2-1. I'm like, I even said, if Tampa gets the next goal, they're going to win the series. So they made it 2-1, and the whole rest of the third period, I'm just waiting for the tying goal. And then however long it takes, they're going to win, and that'll be the unraveling of Columbus, and here comes Tampa. And it just it didn't happen. They had good pressure, but mostly that series has been, where did Tampa go? Where is their offense? Like, Columbus has done a very good job.
And the goalie's good, you know, and I like when I don't even like saying the word. Narratives. Like, I just love when that stuff gets blown up. And one of them with Columbus has been, like, the goalie's different in the playoffs. You will hear people say that. But it's still the same sport. It is the same sport.
Well, to further that, I mean, the thing starts and he gives up three in the first period. Like, maybe some credit for his coach not doing what happened to Bobrovsky in Philadelphia.
Good point.
Which was just get him out of there. And that's where that was against the Sabres in 11. Get him out of there. He can't do it, or maybe it had already happened before that, but it just furthered this idea that he can't play in the playoffs, and Tortorella just stuck with him, and he played great the rest of the way, and they've given up two goals since then.
Yeah, right. Good is good.
Right, so.
Well, I mean, I am interested have been interested in Tampa Bay in these playoffs to see if they can do it, because it is an all-time great regular season. It might be over in a week. Just amazing if that happens. 803-0550 is our number. We've talked playoffs. Also, Tiger Woods a lot today. The Bills started some form of practicing today, and it's all there for you if you want to comment. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, here on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.